Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 24th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, "Fly Like an Eagle, Recovered Raptor Trooper Answers Call of the Wild." Tony Reed writes, "Onlookers burst into applause and cheers Sunday afternoon as Trooper, the resuscitated bald eagle, was released from a cage and flew into the wide blue yonder. Well, sort of. She didn't so much fly like an eagle as flap rather lazily into the branches of a nearby dead tree in Springfield's Riverside Park. You could hardly blame her for feeling she needed a minute or two to get her bearings and her breath back. On January 6th, she had been found crumpled by the side of Interstate 55, not far from where she was released by Sergeant Aaron Entringer with the Sherman Police Department, who was assisted in rescuing the eagle by Illinois Conservation Police Officer Brian Snodgrass. Bald eagles, mighty symbol of these here United States and an in-your-face apex predator, are not above dining a la carte from roadside roadkill. That was what Trooper, so named because of her police connections, was doing when she fell victim not to foul play, but a passing knockout blow from a vehicle collision. I walked up and snapped this picture," said Entringer, showing a shot on his phone of the bloodied, prone bird. "I assumed she was deceased. And then she blinked at me, and I am like, whoa." Trooper's 6-foot-plus wingspan was enfolded into the caring wings of Decatur's Illinois Raptor Center and painstakingly nursed back to health. She had a nasty, bloody scrape down one side of her body. A talon was broken, and the tip of her mighty beak was snapped off, and she was coughing up blood when IRC Program Director Jack Nuzio and Executive Director Jane Seitz first saw her. They handled the release on Sunday with the rescuing police officers among a crowd numbering more than 200 looking on. Seitz explained that Trooper and her flight back to health has since become something of a Facebook sensation, with the IRC followers totaled up by some 10,000 as well-wishers swooped on regular updates about her progress. Seitz said Trooper has a good chance of making a renewed go of it in the wild, and, as eagles bond for life, she probably still has a mate out there who's been wondering where the eagle that clawed his heart flew off to. They stay together for life, and this is the time of year when they are starting to pair up and bond, said Seitz. So I think we got her back in time, because if her mate had already gotten a mate, then it might cause a domestic dispute. Everybody watching Trooper ascend into the blue sky on a surprisingly warm afternoon was firmly of the opinion that if one bird in God's creation deserved a happy homecoming back at the familial nest, it was this one. What a blessing to see she was saved, and what a blessing to see all these people come to support her, said spectator Pam Telger of Chatham, who brought along her grandchildren, Amelia, 16, and Matthew, 7. "I've been following it all in the news, and I just love eagles," added Telger, 72. "They are like our country. They're strong, and they hold themselves up with pride. And occasionally, as Trooper would no doubt confirm, they get by with a little help from their friends." And continuing on the front page, from the Together Decatur series, Donette Beckett writes, "A legacy of giving, preserving. Daughters of the Revolution Decatur branch keeps active." Not many can trace their heritage back to the beginning of the country's formation. A special volunteer organization is open for the women who can. Daughters of the American Revolution is a service organization. The headquarters are in Washington, D.C., but have a local branch, the Stephen Decatur chapter in Macon County. Volunteer opportunities include representing veterans in veterans affairs facilities, preserving historic buildings, music, crafts and traditions, and organizing important scholarship information, said Tina Robinson, the Stephen Decatur chapter regent. We are all about historic preservation, said DAR member Susan Dudra. That's our backbone. Protecting and conserving historical landmarks is important to the DAR, even if those committed to the preservation are not with the organization. Decatur resident Paula Cross has been chosen for the Historic Preservation Medal of the National Society of the DAR. Robinson said only 30 medals are awarded throughout the country annually. Not even one in every state every year, she said. It's rare that someone meets the criteria, Dudra said. Cross is often found cleaning, teaching, and organizing throughout Decatur at various historical and patriotic activities, buildings, and monuments. She has crossed paths with many DAR members while volunteering. This is just a lot of fun, Cross said about her volunteer work. One of her current projects is restoring the 130-year-old Culver House on West Prairie Street in Decatur. Cross, along with other volunteers, began their work on the house 20 years ago. Decatur has lost so many wonderful old historic buildings, she said. We did not want to see one more come down. The house is part of a revitalization project with the hopes of becoming a beneficial building. Something that the community can use, Cross said. We want it to be a home that has been preserved with a lot of the historical integrity kept. The Culver House has a historical connection with the local DAR chapter. Susan Clokey, the wife of the original homeowner, was a DAR regent. Dudra said Clokey was able to save other historical buildings in the community, including a building currently placed at the Macon County Historical Campus. Unless we step up and preserve it, we won't have these stories, Dudra said. Cross is one of the resources. She is just full of history, Dudra said. She knows so much. The DAR presents other community awards. High school students have also been recipients of awards through scholarships. We are a very diverse group of women, Robinson said. The male chapter, Sons of the American Revolution, or SAR, is also open to the community. To be a member, a woman must prove a relationship to a patriot who fought in the Revolutionary War. Current members understand this can be difficult to do. Robinson admits she does not research genealogy as thoroughly as other members. I call on others, she said. I help do other things, like serve the veterans. While researching, a woman must study her family tree to find a patriot. Several of our members volunteer at the genealogical library, Robinson said. Our chapter register can also help do the research. Legal documents are also required from the most recent generations, including grandparents and parents. But going back, you just have to have records that show who your ancestors were, whether it's headstones, newspaper articles, obituaries, proven records to actually prove your genealogy goes back to a patriot, Robinson said. Nationally, DAR added their 1,000,000th member in 2019. As one of more than 100 active Illinois chapters, the Stephen Decatur chapter will be celebrating its 125th anniversary next year. Members meet once a month planning and organizing various volunteer activities for veterans and historical events. We pick items in the community that we can help with, Robinson said. We just try to get people involved. And for the Together Decatur series, if you know a person or a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983. And continuing to the local and state news, Illinois wake-up call led to focus on security. State is doing everything we can to stop cyber meddling. As the March 17th Illinois primary approaches, state and local election officials say they are continually working to keep election records, information, and vote totals safe from outside meddling. What I always say is we're confident that we're doing everything we can to stay a step ahead of cyber attackers, said Matt Dietrich, spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections. But all you can ever hope when you're dealing with cybersecurity is to stay ahead of the next hacker. Sangamon County Clerk Don Gray, whose office oversees elections in the county, said every election authority has been working hard protecting and defending our election apparatus. It is absolutely imperative today that we are proactive and being out in front of cyber criminals. Illinois made national headlines in 2016 after state election officials notified 76,000 voters that their information in the voter registration database had been breached but not changed. In 2018, Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe of election interference in 2016 yielded indictments of 13 Russian hackers. The indictment referenced the intrusion into the Illinois system. I think there's no state that had more of a wake-up call than Illinois, said David Becker, executive director of the nonprofit Washington, D.C.-based Center for Election Innovation and Research. Since then, he said, Illinois has been in many ways a model for some of the other states through transparency about the problem that occurred and about security steps the state has taken. Experts with the state's Cyber Navigator program and Department of Innovation and Technology have worked with all 108 election authorities to protect the system's integrity. The program has a staff of 10. They can conduct risk assessments of the offices, Dietrich said. They can identify hardware that needs to be updated or software that an authority might need. The state added about $800,000 to a $13.2 million federal grant in 2018 and used part of it to create the program. In December, the state received authorization for a new $14.8 million federal grant, but must provide a 20% match before spending the funds. Governor J.B. Pritzker's proposed 2021 fiscal budget, which begins in July, includes $3 million for that match. Other steps taken since the 2016 breach include software upgrades, addition of cybersecurity staff, and work with national organizations and other Illinois state agencies that fight computer attacks. Neil Herron, the Election Board's Cybersecurity Information Sharing Program Manager, noted that election tabulation machines are not networked online, so vote totals can't be compromised from outside. He said reporting results from a few machines in Chicago involve using a cellular wireless system, but one that only allows sending data, not receiving it. He also said that under Illinois law, all voting machines must have some sort of paper backup, either paper ballots, as are used in Sangamon County, or paper receipts. That means a vote-by-vote recount can be done in any contested election. According to Herron, Illinois officials are advising local election authorities on ways to protect their websites. Those sites carry election information, such as where to vote, and report unofficial election results. In recent years, Herron said, alleged Russian hackers sent a doctored web page with fake results from a Ukraine election to Russian media, but Ukrainian officials discovered the wrong numbers before making them public. He said risks of such meddling continue to exist. If a foreign government-backed group wants to penetrate a web page, it's difficult to 100% stop them, Herron said. He said an attack most often could just disable a site, but that, too, could deprive people of information, such as where to vote. In Sangamon County, Gray said, the voter registration system like most such systems in the state, works through the Illinois Century Network. The system is state-managed and avoids use of outside internet companies. Herein City thinks about 101 of the 108 election authorities are on the network. The Secretary of State's computers are also on the Century Network, spokesman Dave Drucker said. Gray also serves on the State Board of Elections Advisory Council and is on the Board of Advisors to the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, jobs that help keep him updated on the latest information about security. And, he said, there is routine training about how to avoid threats, like not opening suspicious emails that could contain malicious software, for all staff members in the clerk's office. Sangamon and other counties were touched by recent problems with the state's automatic voter registration program. Some people flagged for registration at Illinois Secretary of State facilities were ineligible, while voting rights of some former prison inmates were wrongly purged. We've tested extensively, Dietrich said. That system is up and running. There is no reason to doubt the integrity of AVR. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, the top Republican on the U.S. House Administration Committee, is hosting state lawmakers and election officials for a congressional listening session on election registration errors at 9 a.m. Monday at the Sangamon County Board Chambers. Nationally, said Becker, from the election innovation and research nonprofit, election officials have become more vigilant. We are light years ahead of where we were in 2016, Becker said, as federal, state, and local officials are doing a much better job of sharing information about threats. That being said, whenever you use technology, nothing is completely secure. There's always the chance of some kind of vulnerabilities. Becker also said he thinks election officials, the media, and citizens should lower expectations for instant election night results. Such results are non-official and may not reflect provisional ballots cast and other legal but late-arriving ballots. In close elections, he said, next-day results are the way it should be. Overturning an improper result announced in a tight race, he said, could cause chaos and a lot of outrage. With slower but well-vetted results, he said, supporters of both sides could be confident of the result. And more local and state news. Battling addiction. Needle exchange for drug users expanded. Southern Illinois organization on job. From 2011 to 2015, a small pocket of rural Indiana became a hotbed for HIV. Over 200 new infections were reported in Scott County, an area of about 4,200 people, the great majority transmitted between intravenous drug users. Hepatitis C spread rapidly, too. Hindsight would show the outbreak was highly preventable. If state officials had acted quicker to provide harm reduction services like syringe exchange and HIV testing, dozens to hundreds of cases could have been avoided, according to a Yale University study. And Scott County was not the only outbreak of its kind. Micro-outbreaks of HIV have occurred recently among injected drug users in Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Massachusetts, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In 2018, CDC researchers identified another 220 counties around the country that are at significant risk of an outbreak. Most are rural and low income, with high rates of other risk factors like drug overdose deaths and unemployment. Among them is Hardin County in southeastern Illinois. People in the county of just over 4,000 obtained opiate prescriptions at a rate about three times higher than the state average between 2012 and 2017, according to the Illinois Prescription Monitoring Program database. The county also has no dedicated harm reduction services. Many cities have needle exchanges and methadone clinics, but those things are not easily transferable to rural areas, said Wiley Jenkins, a physician and researcher in the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine's Department of Population Science and Policy. Scott Fletcher knows that disparity well. Since 2015, he has been the executive director of the only full-time region-wide harm reduction provider in Southern Illinois, the Community Action Place. He spends his days driving from town to town, providing no-charge clean needles, alcohol swabs, condoms, disease screenings, and used syringe disposal to clients across about 12 Southern Illinois counties, an area of thousands of square miles. TCAP meets some clients at its offices in Murfreesboro and Cairo, and does home deliveries for others. That's what often works best for our rural area, he said. Clients call us, they get on our schedule, and we take them out what they need. Today, the organization has about 300 clients on its rolls, with about 90 to 150 receiving syringes each month. Fletcher distributes them in bundles of 100, which might last a client 1 to several weeks. It's about accessibility, he said. That's when people want our service, when it's dark, when the neighbors won't know what's going on. Fletcher has been involved in the push for region-wide harm reduction since the early 2010s. He built the Community Action Place to fill a treatment void in Southern Illinois after the state budget impasse. From 2015 to 2018, Fletcher was his organization's only employee, providing all disease testing and needle exchange services himself, supported principally by a $13,000 annual grant from the Illinois Department of Public Health, plus small private donations and occasional volunteers. Meanwhile, TCAP struggled to earn the trust of people who use drugs in Southern Illinois, but steadily the organization's reputation and its capabilities have grown. Fletcher built his client base through word of mouth, secured new grants to broaden his services to include sterile drug preparation equipment, and recruited interns and practicum students from SIU Carbondale. This year, through a partnership with Southern Illinois University, TCAP is growing in a big way. In January, the SIU School of Medicine and the University of Chicago announced a 3-year, $5.1 million grant from the National Institutes of Health to study and fight disease transmission among rural drug users. The goal is to make sure what happened in Scott County, Indiana, never happens in Southern Illinois, said Jenkins, who is leading the project called ETHIC, together with physician and researcher Mai Pho of the University of Chicago. Jenkins and Pho first turned to the Community Action Place during ETHIC's preliminary phase in 2017, asking the organization to help recruit people who use opioid and intravenous drugs across Southern Illinois to share their stories. The 176 participants were paid a small financial incentive to submit to a survey and a medical screening for transmittable diseases like HIV, hepatitis C, syphilis, and chlamydia. They were paid another small cash gift for recruiting fellow users to take part. What emerged was the most in-depth snapshot ever taken of drug use and its relationship to disease in Southern Illinois. Some results were reassuring. The study detected a low prevalence of HIV compared to most of the country, Fletcher said, about 4%. Hepatitis C, however, was much more prevalent, found in about a third of all participants. The risk for a swift spread of disease is there, Jenkins said. People in Southern Illinois do share needles. Many know it's not a good idea, but they may do it anyways, or They may not necessarily know that sharing drug cooking supplies can also spread disease. Now, the universities will use the federal funding to attack drug use and disease from several angles. The Ethic Project will also expand harm reduction and disease testing across Southern Illinois by providing substantial new funding to the Community Action Place. The agency has added 5 staff members and a practicum student from SIUC over the last year, Fletcher said, including, for the first time, an employee to help him do deliveries. And next, Decatur Memorial Hospital names Dr. Ted Clark chief medical officer. Dr. Ted Clark, medical director of Decatur Memorial Hospital's emergency department since 2017, has been named the hospital's chief medical officer and affiliate vice president. Clark has worked as a board-certified emergency medicine physician at Decatur Memorial and other Memorial Health Systems hospitals in Springfield and Lincoln since he completed an emergency medicine residency in 2009 at Indiana University School of Medicine. Dr. Clark's dedication to the patients in Macon County and the rest of Central Illinois, his breadth of experience, and his focus on compassion and excellence will further enhance the quality of care at Decatur Memorial as he joins our senior leadership team, DMH President and CEO Drew Early said. While serving in his new role, Clark will maintain his clinical practice in the DMH Emergency Department. Clark earned his medical degree in 2006 from Southern Illinois University School of Medicine in Springfield. He became board certified in emergency medicine in 2010. He received a bachelor's degree in biological sciences in 2001 from Southern Illinois University and a master's in public policy with a concentration on health policy in 2006 from Duke University. Clark has authored peer-reviewed articles in medical journals on physician burnout, patient safety, and medical practice in rural settings. While working on his bachelor's degree at SIU, Clark served for several years as Gray Dog, the Saluki mascot. And try these steps to move on from winter. Full disclosure, it's a really cold winter day and I'm looking for ways to make it until spring. Maybe you are too. When I think about winter, I turn to nature. It's a time of hibernation and dormancy. It's a time of preparation for new growth. With that in mind, I'm reflecting on ways we can invest in ourselves and savor our days during this season. Part of this is nurturing our bodies and focusing on our health, using a variety of the tools at our disposal. Keep moving. Little things will help in the moment, even if you are sitting at your desk all day. Try rotating your ankles and wrists 5 times each direction. Feel those joints loosen up. Reverse your hunch by leaning back, pulling back your shoulders, and looking at the sky. Stretch out your hands and shake them out to relax your fingers. Think about your physical goals, considering the basics of flexibility, balance, strength, and endurance. Take on bigger goals if that suits you. Training for summer activities can be motivating and enjoyable. Another part is building our minds. Some people travel, which is great, but not always an option. You can learn and grow by exploring new places without leaving home. Maybe there's a country you have always been interested in, or maybe you are curious about your past. Find out where your ancestors came from as best you can. Then learn about those places, what it's like there this time of year. What do people eat? Cook some dishes to get a taste of their lives. Look into the literature, music, and art. Online resources make it easy to immerse yourself in different cultures. These tips from Liz Ryer, who is a credentialed coach with more than 20 years of business experience. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, February 24th, 2020. Please stay tuned.